Coming up on Tech News Today, Google gets rid of the Android market. Sort of. Anonymous beheaded. Or was it? And the music industry makes money. Seriously, we'll tell you how and more next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, March 6th, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 30% off your new account for 3 months, go to Squarespace.com and use offer code TNT3. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zaktar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we kick around the tech news of the day and say, Apple rumor? Apple rumor? Any Apple rumors falling out?
I like to call this Happy Gratuitous Page Views Day, everyone.
Right, because it's like a tsunami. It sucks all of the news out of the harbor in front of the Apple announcement.
And you can say almost anything in a headline because no one will remember tomorrow.
Right,
it's exactly. True.
Whether you're right or not.
Those of you who hate Apple, we should be warned that tomorrow's show will start with news about the Apple announcement. After that, though, we will move on. So you'll be able to fast forward if you watch the podcast or listen.
If you watch it live, though, you're going to have to sit and watch it.
You will have or to like, go out of the room or something, but we won't spend the entire show, I promise
what
you.
What if it's not at all newsworthy?
Then we'll skip it. Exactly.
If it turns out that Apple's announcing a new
bold packaging font for their website.
Yeah, then we'll throw out news fuse.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Let's kick it off with the new Android market. Google says, screw that. We don't care about the tsunami. We're going to announce something big. We're getting rid of Android market as a name and replacing it with Google Play. So Google Music now becomes Play Music. Google eBook Store will become Play Books.
Okay. Not to be confused with the BlackBerry Play Books.
And the movie rentals and the movie purchases in the Android market become Play Movies, although the YouTube movie rentals do not join this. They're still linked. If you buy a movie in
it's the same library.
Play Movies, it'll show up in your YouTube library, but it's still just called YouTube on the YouTube side.
Because I guess Google, if they're saying Play Music, Play Books, they have to have a Play Movies area or it'll seem like, why couldn't they just have a YouTube widget?
Well, Google's kept like YouTube separate for so long, including with when they did all this Google Plus style redesign. YouTube's the last one to have that black bar still not up on the top of that page. I think they're keeping that separate because it's got a lot of goodwill for it, and they just don't want to mess with that. And to bring it in-house with Google Play seems a little iffy.
Or if for whatever reason someone's like, I don't know, I'm not a YouTube user, they won't even really know the difference. They'll just
be
playing their Google movies.
Yeah, exactly. To have dual branding. Jamie Rosenberg, Google's director of digital content, said this is really an acknowledgement that these experiences are relevant not just for a mobile environment but across the web. So starting today, when you go to the Android market on the web, on like your desktop, you'll see all of the Google Play offerings and an explanation of them. It will roll out to Android devices slowly over the next few days. And at the same time, Google announced that they're lifting the 50 megabyte cap on Android market apps. I mean, Google Play Store. Play Store?
That's easy to say,
apps,
isn't it?
Replacing it with a 4 gigabyte cap. Now, the APK still has to be 50 megabytes, but you can add two gigabyte extension files to your app. So you can have a huge database of stuff that
That's
goes along with
big
it.
Big for games, especially.
Yeah.
Because so often you download a game, and then you launch the game to play it, and then you have to download this massive in-app data in order to even start.
Google Play will not be the same in every country, though, because not every country has all the offerings. So in the U.S., we get apps, movies, books, and music. U.K. and Canada only get apps, movies, and books. The music isn't anywhere outside of the United States yet. Australia only gets apps and books. Japan only gets apps and movies. And everywhere else is just apps. So your Google Play experience may vary.
It will vary. It seems, I'm watching the chat room, it seems like people are pretty split on whether the name Google Play is a good one or not.
Play
I do
books.
Definitely think that anyone who previously thought, oh, Android market is for people who have Android devices, Android phones, a few Android tablets, but I can see that being confusing, especially since they now have such a large group of people who can be buying other things. whether they're Android users or not.
Do you think this makes a lot of sense to put it all under one umbrella? I mean, we've talked about how bloated iTunes is, and there's all these, there's so much content in there that it almost seems like they should be broken out. And Google had it broken out pretty well with Android Market for this and that and the other thing. Now that they've added Play and I guess a uniform branding for it, is that going to make anything better? I mean,
I think iTunes' bigger problem is that it's called iTunes. I mean, having one big store, the way Amazon does and some others I can think of do, isn't necessarily a bad thing. I just think the branding has to be right. I think Google's on the right track here. You could argue that you don't play a book and it'd be cooler to say watch a movie than play a movie. But it's better than Android Market where people think, oh, I can't buy a book because I don't have an Android phone.
Well, I guess what I don't understand about it is Play, like you said, doesn't necessarily translate to book very well, right? Like play a book. If it's still Market and it's Market Book or Market Bookstore, like that makes more sense to me because you're going to the market to buy whatever they have there.
So you books, think they should have changed it to the Google Market to get rid of the Android? But kept the market.
Yeah, exactly, and kept it market. Play just seems so directed at a few things that it really makes sense with, you know, games or apps. It doesn't even make sense with productivity apps. Do you play a calendar
my task
app?
List?
No.
You know? No, and that's where...
Play my calendar.
Apple has the App Store. It's very clear. Like, that is where I go to get apps. This is not so clear anymore, so I'm not sure I think it's the best move. I think it is a good move to unify
I do,
it,
too.
Though, because it was a little weird... To kind of wrap your head around all the offerings. Just not sure that I would have done it this way, but we'll see.
In the Google promo video, the way they show off Google Play, and they show you like using like old mechanical ways of getting music and telephone things, very odd pictures. But the idea was that you'd be able to start a movie here, move on to your other device, sort of that whole cloud kind of experience. And there it is. This is the video. I wonder if this is part of Google's bigger push. We've been talking about their home entertainment devices in general. There have been these rumors of the Google X Labs coming up with speakers that you could have your music on, or the Google TV experience being better. Google Play seems like it makes a lot of sense when you're saying, yeah, I can go from my phone to my television again. So maybe that's just an indication that they're pushing towards that, which has been rumored for a while now.
The heads of Anonymous have been lopped off, and therefore the authorities have won, and Anonymous is defeated, right? Because it was a very hierarchical organization.
Exactly.
Without its leaders, it cannot operate.
No, that's not.
No, actually, that's not true. But seven alleged hackers have been arrested across the U.S., U.K., and the Republic of Ireland, charged with crimes related to the computer attacks associated with Lulzsec and Anonymous. Lulzsec's so-called leader, Sabu, a.k.a. Hector Xavier Monsegur, pled guilty apparently on August 12th to criminal charges and then subsequently cooperated with the FBI in secret. He got caught because he forgot to use Tor when he was logging into an IRC room and accidentally showed off his IP address. The FBI found him right away, nabbed him. If you remember, back in August, he disappeared for a month and then came back and said, ha-ha, you know, that just happens. I'm just playing a prank. However, Anonymous has... sort of assumed that he was compromised ever since then. And today it became obvious that they were right. Ryan Aykroyd, known as Kayla, of Doncaster, the United Kingdom. Jake Davis, you may know as Topiary of London. Darren Martin, Ownsauce of Ireland. This is an Irish name that I may not pronounce right, but Donka O'Carvill, a.k.a. Palladium of Ireland, and Jeremy Hammond, also known as Anarchaos of Chicago, all have been placed under arrest and charged with computer crimes. Now, they haven't been found guilty yet. They still have to go to trial. Hammond is alleged to be the man behind the hack of Stratfor back in December. And Anonymous on IRC is reacting to all of this, first with anger at Sabu for turning state's evidence, and also with disdain for the FBI, saying, so you arrested a bunch of us. We're a distributed collective. We don't have leaders.
Yeah, you didn't get the top guys.
Yeah, there
you
are no
got
top
some
guys.
People. Although, if Anonymous, let's just say that they were on to Sabu disappearing and then coming back. So they feel like something's up and we no longer trust him and he might have information on us, which apparently he was giving to the FBI. Why was it possible for the FBI to track them down if it's so hard to track them down?
Well, there was all these leaked things about the FBI dossiers about Sabu and Kayla and a bunch of these people, and they had chat logs for these individuals. And it looked like that Sabu had a good hold on a set number of people that they would trust him no matter what. Mm. So maybe those people were more likely to believe him and saying, oh, yeah, I'm not an informant. But I would assume a lot more people that were beyond that little group would be very, very skeptical at what he was doing at that particular time.
And Lulzsec has been dead for a while, right? I mean, we don't hear about Lulzsec anymore. They shut it down for all intents and purposes. So arresting a bunch of folks associated with Lulzsec also doesn't do much to Anonymous. Barrett Brown, who is one of the only public people who is willing to give his real name and associate himself with the Anonymous movement, told the New York Times he received advance warning of an FBI raid on his home in Dallas. He hid his laptops to avoid them being found, and he promised that Anonymous will go forward as usual. So will I. We hired an army of lawyers last January. We are prepared for a big slugout. So he's trying to give the impression that, hey, you know what, these guys have been arrested, but that doesn't mean they're going to jail or they'll even be found guilty. This is all based on what the FBI believes they have found out. Maybe, you know, we said also known as topiary. Maybe that's not even topiary. That could end up being proved as well. It's hard to say. Google and Motorola are possibly approaching peace in the patent wars. Yesterday, U.S. Circuit Judge Richard A. Posner in Chicago ordered Google and Motorola to turn over details related to the Android development process. Yeah, how you work on Android, you know, your roadmap, give that to Apple, please. Also, anything related to Google's acquisition of Android back in the day and anything related to Google's pending acquisition of Motorola. This is in a case where Motorola is countersuing, so there's going to be back-to-back trials starting June 11th if this goes forward. The patents at issue are a method and apparatus for distributing events in an operating system and an object-oriented multitasking system. According to Dow Jones Newswires, though, coincidentally, Apple has proposed settlements to Samsung and Motorola, which Apple, remember, Steve Jobs said, I will fight this until we're out of cash. I will crush Android. Apple apparently, according to Dow Jones, offering royalties of between $5 and $15 for each Android handset sold in order to settle many of these patent disputes. And Apple has previously offered to license its technology to Samsung and has licensing agreements with Nokia and IBM. So it's not like they've never licensed anything before.
Yeah, the patents at stake here are pretty much go to the core workings of Android. So it's not something that you can just take out. So what Apple's got is pretty much if they have what they have and they kind of can take all this money out of Android, which is fine for them, which also shows something, though. Even though a lot of people – now, the deal hasn't been done yet, but that means Apple would be fine with the idea of Android using these things, licensing the patents, because they would get money for it. And Android would still continue to exist. It's not like it's going to get shut down or rewritten or anything. It's simply pay us some more money because Microsoft's doing the same thing. They have patents on the way certain things work on Android, and hardware manufacturers are paying up because that's just the way it is.
Is it worth more for Google and Motorola, for that matter, to go ahead and settle this so that they don't have to give up some sort of a larger Android roadmap so that Apple has all of that backstory and all of that information?
I mean, a settlement could work out that way. I would think what's probably going to happen is one of those long-term cross-licensing things like what Microsoft and Apple did a while ago, where Apple sued Microsoft about the design of Windows in general. And then they eventually started sharing patents like crazy because that's more beneficial for both. Because Google would love to use some of the stuff that Apple has. And Google has a bunch of patents, especially with their purchase of Motorola, that they would love to get their hands on as well. So you're probably just going to see the thing I say all the time, cross-licensing agreement.
This episode is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. Squarespace has an easy-to-use UI. I use it every week, twice a week. Forecast and Sword and Laser I use Squarespace for, and it's easy for me to just go in and make those posts, update things, cut and paste, beautiful templates. The sites look fantastic, and I don't have to be good at design, which I'm not because I'm using those templates that Squarespace provides. 13 new template redesigns, 85 new style options, 2 brand new templates, and you can get apps for your Android, for your iPad, for your iPhone. You can update your blog on the go. They give you traffic reports. They give you reliable service. They give you a support team. You don't get that if you're running it yourself. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, free live classes to help you get the most out of your Squarespace blog if you want it. Or you can just call them up and say, hey, I need help with this. All-inclusive service. It is the easiest way to make a fantastic looking and reliable blog. So check it out for free. You don't even have to use a credit card. Just go to squarespace.com, sign up for a free account. No credit card needed. Just try it out. Start building your website. Then, if you decide to purchase it, use offer code TNT3 and get 30% off for 3 months. That's right, squarespace.com. Use that offer code TNT3, and we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. All kinds of Microsoft news still coming out as they push Windows 8. The Verge has an interesting leak.
Yeah, The Verge has an exclusive from its sources. They have a bunch of screenshots and some more data and details about the next version of Office, Office 15. If you take a look at the design, overall, everything is a lot cleaner. It's crisp. It's minimal. It's got this tablet-friendly kind of interface. I'm going to run down the applications here. Word 15 includes a read mode, which removes distractions. You can see these apps are in full screen. The mode also has a resume reading function, so it actually automatically bookmarks where you are when you're reading something, so it'll go right back to that. There's something called Object Zoom, where you can double-click an object. Obviously, in this screenshot, you don't see anything. But if you double-tap the picture, it would fill the screen, kind of like something you'd get used to in a tablet or in something like a web browser.
A photo or a video.
Exactly. There's also Expand and Collapse, a little feature that lets you collapse paragraphs under headings. Then there's Excel 15, which kind of looks the same, but one of the things that Microsoft went ahead and did was provide something called recommended charts and pivot tables. So if you have a bunch of data and you don't know what to do with it, Microsoft's going to try to help you out. They're kind of like a Wolfram Alpha kind of feel with that. PowerPoint 15 goes to 16:9, so yay, you know, nice cinematical presentations instead of 4:3. Outlook 15 got pumped up a little bit with peaks. You can see schedules a lot easier. There are details about the people you're emailing, and there's a weather bar. Inline replies, because Microsoft did, they bulked up mail for Windows 8, so they had to make Outlook a little bit different. Now, I'm looking at these screenshots. Everything looks really crisp. One of the big things about the last version of Office with that ribbon, a lot of people were just baffled by it. They're like, what is this? It's a mess. I don't know where my shortcuts are. I don't understand this. One of the things I'm surprised by is how simple it looks. It looks like if you just had to use a touch interface or you're used to keyboard shortcuts, it looks somewhat simple to use, which is something like bizarre to say about something as heavy as Microsoft Office.
But for somebody who has been using Office for years and upgrades have maybe added a little bit of functionality with each new version, but nothing that looked too incredibly different, I can also see people saying, what? Everything's totally moved around. Where are all my options? I don't want to hide anything when I'm reading a long document. It seems like, yes, it's something that people can get used to, and maybe they'd end up liking it more after a certain amount of time. But it would it would get the rage going for people in the short term.
Well, maybe what they'll say about that is the same thing they're saying about Metro. They'll just be spinning it.
Yeah, the CIO of Microsoft,
same idea, huh?
Kevin Turno at CBIT, saying, well, businesses should love Metro because it's relatively distraction-free. So when you're looking at Word and you just see that page, it should be really easy to use. You're not going to be going, oh, what's going on somewhere else? On top of that, Turno keeps pushing the no-compromise angle, right? You can use this on a tablet. You can use this on a traditional PC. It's no compromise, except
That's kind of silly, though, for someone to say, hey, management, you're going to get so much more productivity out of your team because that's what was holding them back. Too many buttons in Office. Now we're going to hide all of those and they won't have anything to do but work harder.
You got to spin it somehow. I mean, otherwise, I mean, I'm sure that's what they said about, it's actually what they said about the ribbon. They said it was a lot easier to use. This functionality in Word that you never knew was there. Now you can find it. Now it's all of a sudden.
To be fair, though, if they came out with something that looked like the last version, everybody would rip them apart for not changing anything and not improving it. Anytime you make an improvement, you're going to piss some people off because they liked it the way it was. So it always remains to be seen until this stuff gets out in the real world how disruptive it really is. Now, the Metro interface definitely is a departure, and I'm still unconvinced that it is the best way to go. But the fact that you can still get back to that desktop is good. A lot of people, though, I'm really going to miss that start button.
Ah, the start button. Well, there's a way to bring it back, apparently, according to created by a Microsoft MVP, which I didn't know was a thing, Most Valuable Professional. There's a free piece of software called VStat that gives you a Windows 7 start menu back. But some have reported that there are issues with the orb overlapping with the taskbar button. So if you want no compromise and you want to compromise on your Windows 8 install, you can install this piece of free software and you can kind of have it back. I would imagine, though, for Office, might be plugins like that. Bring it back the way it was.
There's always mods. There's always ways, first of all, to get all the features in the new version of Windows in the current version. That's always a high-click article for ZDNets and CNets of the world. And then there's always a way to customize the new version so it looks just like the old version.
That's right. Actually, I put in the Windows 95 taskbar on my 3.1 install.
Yeah. This is my point. People don't like change.
Right.
Some people like change. Some people do not want.
I also think this MVP award should be, more public. Maybe the tech reporter should vote on it.
Yeah, you're
they
right.
Should give a trophy.
There should be a ceremony. There should be like a car. Yeah.
All right, finally, Spectrum Wars. Thing for that now, too.
It's like a
Verizon
radio tower.
Made a joint filing to the FCC with Spectrum Co. last Friday. If you remember, Verizon wants to buy Spectrum from Spectrum Co., which is a consortium of cable companies in the advanced wireless spectrum. Verizon claims it'll be out of breathing room in some areas by next year in their filing. And in fact, wider scale exhaustion could happen by 2015. They take into account that they could issue femtocells. They could refarm their old CDMA1X spectrum, but it would not be sufficient to meet the need. Meanwhile, T-Mobile, Sprint, DirecTV, and the Rural Telecommunications Group and six others have all filed a request with the FCC to halt its 180-day review of Verizon's advanced wireless spectrum acquisition and freeze all pending spectrum transfers until full legal disclosure has been achieved. Verizon, on the other hand, announced a new way to use that spectrum, the Home Fusion service. It replaces DSL by having you install a cylindrical antenna outside your house. It's about the size of a 5-gallon bucket and cost you $200, but then delivers 5 to 12 megabit per second LTE service into your home for $60 a month with a 10 gigabyte cap.
I kind of like this idea. I mean, the thing is, this
you like the idea of a 10 gigabyte cap?
Well, here's why, because you're going head to head against DSL, and DSL is not exactly blazing fast. And the thing is, at $60 a month, maybe that's not so bad. You're not moving around, so you know you have coverage. You know that this location will receive a consistent speed versus having, a handset where you're like, I might not have coverage in this area. At least you know what you're getting in this particular case. As for the 10 gigabyte cap, again, it's either you had DSL, so it's super slow, or you might have to run into, the access is just not the same. That's what I like the idea of Verizon trying this. Although it does make me remember the whole net neutrality rules where wireless companies can do what they want with packets. Well, under the rules.
Yeah, they're not violating net neutrality with a 10 gigabyte cap. They're right. just basically saying, look, most people don't use more than 5 gigabytes a month, so let's limit that because we're not going to have enough spectrum anyway. We're going to be at capacity, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But they're certainly not slowing down in ways to fill up that spectrum that they decided that they're going to run out of very soon.
We've got to run out of it somehow, right? Just keep putting it out there.
And the FCC is trying to figure out how to, retire old services so they can free up even more spectrum. All right, let's finish up with good news for the music industry.
Yeah, at least for anybody who said nobody downloads music.
That's right.
The music industry is falling apart. Back in January, and we had covered this earlier on TNT, a Nielsen SoundScan report showed that digital sales accounted for over 50% of all music purchases in the U.S. in 2011. First time that's ever happened. That was sales only, not revenue. So you could say, well, if Lady Gaga sells her whole album for 99 cents on Amazon and sells 500,000 copies in 2 days, it's not a lot of revenue. It's just a lot of sales, a lot of downloads. Today, some data from NPD shows that the number of buyers is also increasing, though. So it's a trend going upward. 78 million Americans bought music bought digital music in 2011. That's up 2% from the year before, and it's up 2 years in a row. NPD also said that 45 million paid for music downloads through iTunes and Amazon, which is up a whopping 14% from 2010. That's quite a rise. Now, these are direct purchases only, so they're not even accounting for anybody who's paying $10 a month, like I am, for a streaming service, and not even really paying for any direct download. So you might think, well, it's a little counterintuitive that downloads would be going up so much when people have yet more options in order to not download songs or even full albums. And for example, Pandora's announcement, earnings announcement came out today. They now have 47 million active users. They have over 100,000 registered users, 100 million registered users. So almost half of those are active in its most recent quarter, which is up 62% year over year. So huge growth as far as people actually using Pandora regularly. In February, you might recall, MySpace claimed they've got 25 million registered users. They have a huge music library, bigger than Spotify, bigger than really anybody else. Back in 2010, speaking of Spotify, they claimed 10 million users. They haven't released numbers since then, but you have to assume there's at least some considerable
growth.
Probably
gone up because they launched in the U.S., right?
Yeah, exactly. That was pre-U.S. Then again, you know, so you think, okay, well, it sounds like people are just, they're paying for more music, they're listening to more streaming music. It's kind of on the up and up, so what do these record labels have to worry about? Then again, it might have been a very good year for downloads in 2011. Adele, you might have heard of her. She won every Grammy.
I liked her first album.
Yeah. It was called 19.
Before she sold out.
Before she turned 21 and belted
and
so
got
well. But she sold the most albums since Usher did back in 2004. So sometimes you have a year where somebody has an album that's so incredibly popular that people end up buying an album. They might not be album buyers in general. So I think you've got these peak years too. So that's something to consider.
I have a theory of what's going on here. And I think the music industry is on the recovery. And I think you're right about fluctuations in a year where there's somebody like Adele. I think it does have an effect. And it's a good effect. But a couple things happened. One is digital music transition happened without the music industry. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's one of the big reasons we saw such a drop in revenue is it took a while for the music industry to actually provide a useful alternative, to drop DRM, to allow multiple stores like Amazon and Google and iTunes to sell music. And we're just now seeing the payoff from that becoming an established industry. These effects don't happen instantaneously. You don't drop DRM, launch an Amazon music store, and expect all of a sudden everybody rushes in and it starts happening. It takes a few years to pay off. What has covered transitions in the past is making everybody rebuy things, right? So when you go from LP to CD, it causes a disruption in the market, but you get a lot of sales because everybody says, oh, well, I'm going to buy my Beatles CDs now. You didn't have that with digital because, A, they boofed it by not giving you a reasonable alternative to going out and finding it on Napster or BitTorrent, et cetera. And you didn't need to actually replace. You could take your CDs and digitize them and play them on your new iPod. Mm-hmm. So it's taking a while for that effect to wear off as well and people to say, well, actually, I need to start buying new music again. Oh, and I realize there's easy places to get it and I can put it on my music player and I can listen to it where I want. And I think Spotify's and Pandora's will have a radio-like effect. I don't know how long this will last, but I think we do have this instinct of like, hey, I really like that. And I know it's in my Spotify collection, but what if I stop subscribing to Spotify? I want to keep it. I'm going to buy the MP3 so I just make sure I have it because I really like it.
Yeah, I think the streaming music angle of it is it's an interesting one and it's going to take a while for it to become obvious how it's changing the industry. I think Pandora, which I know it's not available outside the U.S., so it's very annoying sometimes when we talk about Pandora, but that's pretty close to radio. I mean, you can choose what kind of station you want to listen to, but you don't know what your next song is going to be. Something like Spotify, I can have a collection. You can say, oh, Spotify probably has the same effects as a radio. You like the song, you end up buying the album. But on Spotify, I can just listen to that song over and over and over. So I have a lot more control than I would with the radio, so I don't think it's going to push the same kinds of direct download sales that a song I like on the radio, end up finding out who the artist is, buy it on iTunes, would have done.
I'm curious to see what happens when Spotify actually institutes those limits that they were supposed to do. In the United States, it was supposed to be 6 months, and then you only had like 5 plays of a song in a current time period. That's around, I think, where they are around the world. I wonder if that's going to bump up sales as well, because I know that I've listened to certain tracks over 5 times, and once that becomes no longer available, I'm going to buy it because I
and you're not paying. It's this is just the free
this
version.
This currently
of Spotify.
The free one, yeah. So I mean, they haven't changed that limit just yet. They haven't added it yet. I'm waiting for that shoe to drop and see what it's going
to
do.
I wonder if they're trying to get up to a certain amount of registered users before they turn it on, so that they at least have that that group that might spring for
critical mass.
Yeah, a subscription version.
All right, let's start the news fuse. As I explained at the top of the show, Apple rumors are not going to stop until the announcement tomorrow. Somebody out there does want to hear them. So really quickly, 9 to 5 Mac reports their sources tell them the next iPad will go on sale March 16th, coinciding with the launch of new Apple stores in Houston and London. Their source also says a second Apple launch event will happen a week later. I'm not sure I believe that one. And The Verge reports that a new iPad and a new Apple TV will both have a new chip called the A5X. We've heard that name rumored before. So there you go. We'll find out the real thing tomorrow morning. Next.
Well, Tom, Apple's not the only one that gets an event tomorrow because it's also the release of Mass Effect 3. But wait, panic, panic in the streets. There's a bug that stops the importation of faces.
What?
Nobody in Mass Effect 3 will have faces.
Oh, my God.
Actually, it's not that bad. Oh, hold on to your faces. If you created a custom face for Shepard in Mass Effect and then imported it into Mass Effect 2, there's a bug that prevents that face from being recognized in Mass Effect 3. BioWare is aware of this issue, and they are working on a fix. So PC users can try the fan-made fix at masseffectstools.99k.org in the meantime. Get that face back.
More gaming stuff. Nintendo announced that the 3DS has sold over 4.5 million units, and that's just in the United States. The handheld was launched in late March of last year, so it took Nintendo under a year to reach that sales figure. The 3DS is outpacing the original DS, which sold 2.3 million units in its first year.
Verizon announced a bunch of devices are getting Ice Cream Sandwich, the operating system, but didn't bother to give any dates or time frames. Moto fans should be happy to know that droids like the Razer and the Droid 4 will get updated. Samsung's Galaxy Tab 7.7 and 10.1 getting updated as well. The full list is available all over the web and in our show notes at twit.tv/TNT.
Ubisoft released the trailer for Assassin's Creed 3, complete with a cameo from George Washington. Get ready to take on redcoats when the game launches on October 30th. Over at Xbox.com, the game's description briefly said that the sequel will be able to handle up to 4-player online co-op. That data was removed, but Eurogamer was lucky enough to grab the screenshot as proof. It was up there.
Want to know what's an ACTA? Well, Representative Daryl Issa wants to give you that information. ACTA was originally negotiated in secret, which had many irked because of the implications it could have on intellectual property and the internet. The full text of the treaty is available at keepthewebopen.org. That's keepthewebopen.org. Sorry, .com slash ACTA. Can't say that. I said it twice and I said it wrong. Let's do that again. keepthewebopen.com/ACTA.
Stop. Biz.
Stop.
That info?
.gov.
Okay.
Biz.
The site also provides its own commentary about the agreement, calling it unconstitutional, but you can read it for yourself again at keepthewebopen.com/ACTA.
.tv.
Hey, world, congratulations. Adobe just gave you Lightroom 4.
Yeah!
Pat yourself on the back. This version of Lightroom brings video cataloging, some editing functionality. Adobe also simplified the UI and editing controls to make your photos pop. Adobe cut the price in half, too. The app now costs $150 or $80 for an upgrade and is available right now. Want to know more? Check out this week's episode of Twit Photo. They did an in-depth discussion about it.
You know, Lightroom always felt a little priced out of my reach, and I might actually try it out.
$150.
With a lighter price tag?
That's right. Lighter room and price tag. Apple and Google representatives have agreed to meet with Senator Charles Schumer over privacy concerns. On Sunday, the senator said that he was going to send a letter to the FTC to investigate Apple and Google over data being transmitted without the user understanding the situation. After contacting both companies, Schumer said they were friendly and open to the idea that this ought to be changed.
Dot name.
Didn't they also just announce
that
last
week?
.edu. Exactly. Maybe Zynga's got some competition. Alex St. John's got a new social gaming company, and the site's at Magi.com. I promise. Or Magi.com.
Magi.
St. John used to be the president of social gaming network High Five. The new site is already available as an open beta and can match you with anonymous friends if you want to play a social game without being so social.
Oh, nice. It's about time there's some competition there, right?
Yes.
Okay.
It is time.
Let's move on to the random.
.com.
Randomizer.net.
Eye-controlled games moving closer to reality. We actually saw this at CES, the Tobii system, when we were walking around. Was that a digital experience? I can't remember exactly.
Unveiled.
Unveiled?
Yeah, that's what we
saw. Ah, okay.
Yeah, I think it was unveiled.
I was there.
They are back at CeBIT on Monday with some new versions of their eye-tracking technology, the Tobii IS2 eye tracker module. Says it's more responsive, could fit in a wider range of hardware. They're still showing off eye asteroids, though, which allows you to, like, turn and shoot asteroids with your eyes.
That's eyes spelled EYE because it's for your eyes, not some kind of Apple knockoff.
Oh, right.
We
saw, that's a good point.
We did see this at CES, and it actually was quite responsive. I mean, it seems like a fun game if you want to just blast things with your eyes. But the thing is, this is supposed to be able to support more devices, which should bring the cost down, because I think this thing costs $50,000 or something bizarre, something very way too expensive. You would only see it maybe once or twice or in some, you know, a very wealthy person's house. Maybe this would be an arcade. Well, maybe arcades, but...
Asteroids.
A wealthy person's arcade room.
Asteroids. It should have been asteroids.
In some sort of demonstration hall presentation. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, a corporate type thing.
It'll be right next to a Surface table.
Those prices come down. Yeah. That's always that's the research price.
How do you shoot? Do you blink or do you open up real wide?
Do you remember?
I think it was a blink.
I think it was a blink.
It was, you'd look, but I think you'd have to... No, it was a double blink because it was not a normal thing.
Right. They didn't want you just to be doing your normal blink.
That's very Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
He's... Okay.
But it's real.
If you haven't seen the movie, you won't know what I'm talking about, and I might have actually ruined it.
Hey, is that the calendar?
Oh, it is. I'm glad you said something about that, Tom, because I was really on a tangent. Samsung's new smart LED TV, the ES8000, will begin shipping today. It was the talk of CES, or one of them anyway. The Zynga platform is open beta starting today, so you can play games away from the evil clutches of Facebook.
Zuckerberg.
Twitch live coverage of the Apple announcement starts tomorrow at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time. I just wanted you to know.
Somebody in the chat room asked earlier,
don't blink twice, okay?
Blinking, you're dead.
Just wanted to make sure you knew when we would start our live stream. It'll be fun. We're all going to be, Tom and me and Alex and Leo. Also tomorrow, the GeekWire Summit is being held in Seattle, Washington. Probably was put together well before Apple's announcement, because otherwise a bit of an unfortunate time for a conference that would want some publicity. Also tomorrow, but going through Thursday, is the Launch Summit happening in San Francisco, focusing on startups. And finally, Nokia World 2012 has been announced. It'll be held September 25th and 26th in Helsinki. That's in Finland.
It is still, as far as we know.
Yeah.
All right, what's next?
Incoming message.
Oh, why that,
right,
Tom?
An incoming message. This one comes from Eck. You may know him as a hockey blogger. Says, hey, Tom, just an FYI, I have a TouchSmart, HP TouchSmart, which was truly a pain to use. I got it as a way for the kids to kind of have a giant iPad, but it was not very intuitive, and the interface was cloggy at best. Putting Windows 8 Consumer Preview has changed a bad Windows touchscreen PC into an incredible 25-inch Windows tablet. You can get these really cheap on Craigslist, and I truly recommend it.
Yeah, back when I was a reporter, I actually played with the TouchSmart a lot. And
still a reporter.
Well, so. I mean, when I was writing, I guess, you know. But I didn't say I wasn't a journalist. My point is that I tried out the TouchSmart, and the thing is, HP had to do a lot of the driver support, and that was a little iffy. The multi-touch wasn't that great. Gesture support was a little iffy and kind of laggy, which means Microsoft's doing a lot of the heavy lifting when it comes to this. I mean, HP is one of their partners in general, so maybe they're already optimized for this.
I can see that Metro with the desktop available be perfect with the TouchSmart.
Yes, you get that giant start menu. You're like, I'm going to tap that.
That's pretty cool.
Got another email from Fred in Glasgow, Scotland, or 3Cubed on Reddit. Hello, Fred. He says, when you were talking about Steam's possible hardware in episode 450, you were referring to it as a Steam box. Surely it would be called a sauna or a kettle. Both could be considered boxes of Steam. Maybe not. On a more serious note, a box by Steam would be an interesting way of leveling the playing field in the console versus PC gaming. But would the PC gaming elite feel that this would be a betrayal? Love the show, guys. I should be visiting at the end of May, and I'm really excited to meet you all. And we're excited to meet you, too. So what do we think about this betrayal?
They should think it's a betrayal. Because if Steam does this right, which I can't believe they wouldn't, you would still be able to install Steam on a high-end PC, you know, on your Doghouse system, on your Alienware, on your Dell XPS. You would be able to still use it. You would just have the option of using whatever the Steam platform is in addition to it. That doesn't mean that gamers won't still get upset, because gamers like to get upset when things change, because people hate change. But I think you'd still have your ability to do high-end consoles and high-end gaming and all of that.
I get to see hardcore gamers going, that's not really Steam. This is Steam over here. And then they'll have an argument about whether it's not.
That's just not Steam. That's just some limp condensation. This is Steam.
That's not a Steam.
This could open an envelope. Steam. Something like that. All right. Well, we've killed the show. Thank you for watching. It's over now. This is the last one. No, it's not. But we need stories, or we might not have a show tomorrow. So please submit them and vote on them at technewstoday.reddit.com. It's our subreddit where folks can submit stories for us to consider and talk about, and then vote on whether they should go up or down
and
on the
tomorrow,
list.
Tomorrow, they're super important on Reddit, because there's going to be one monstrous story trying to take up all the headlines of Google News. If you guys want to put in stories at Reddit, that would help a lot.
Of course, I have to be stories, too. But you can't do anything about that. You can do the voting, though, and the submitting. And thanks, everybody, for watching or listening. We were supposed to have Lauren Good from All Things D on the show. She was very apologetic. She got pulled into some South by Southwest coverage at the last minute. We will reschedule her hopefully soon because we like having her on the show. That's it for us. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, or give us a phone call on the old telephone. 260-TNT-SHOW is the phone number. We are duly blessed tomorrow. Veronica Belmont and Joanna Stern.
Woohoo!
See you then.